Yes, we do. And welcome, welcome to episode 79 of Coffee with the Coder. We hope that insider scenarios put a little joy in your heart, a little laughter in your day, and can't wait to visit with you and interact with you again. So good morning, Paula, for the official call.
Good morning. So I didn't get to say it in the insiders portion, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. Revenue Warriors is going to be opening in February, guys. We are so excited, and we'll share more about that with you in a later episode. I also have a special for insiders. So if you were on the insiders portion for the upcoming CPT webinar, if you sent us a case scenario, such as you heard in the insider portion, just something you made up or got into a Christmas carol or something, a TV show, anything. And if you send the case and you were an insider, you will get the upcoming CPT webinar for $30. And this is going to be, I believe it's about an hour and a half, and I think we're doing that this Friday. If you still want it, but you don't really have a way to code it or can't send the codes there, you can still get access to it, and that'll be for $40. But just let us know. Also, all of these questions, remember that we're answering on the live call and on the insiders portion. We have a great library for you. Just visit us at aqiq.com because it's only going to remain free for a limited time. So, Pam, I'm going to turn it back over to you for the question.
Awesome, awesome. So we're going to go into different places of service, and the first place of service is a hospital. We have a question from our friend Ida. She says, how would I code sharp excisional debridement for the right foot involving full thickness, soft tissue, tendon, and bone? The bone was calcaneous. Also, is there a PCS code for insertion of antibiotic beads into the calcaneus? Coding clinic directs me to E03, but the only choice for open isn't correct.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Ida. And I just realized as Pam was asking that question, in my answer, I only answered part of it. So we're going to have to answer part of it and say, hey, stay tuned. I'm going to come back and answer the rest of it in our next session. And Ida, thank you. We've known Ida for a long time and appreciate your questions. So basically there's a guideline for overlapping body parts, and that guideline is B as in boy, 3.5 in ICD-10 PCS. And it states, if a root operation such as excision, extraction, repair, or inspection are performed on overlapping layers of the musculoskeletal system, the body part specifying the deepest layer is coded. So they did the debridement, and they went through, you know, the skin, the muscle, and the subcutaneous tissue, and then all the way down to the bone. So we're going to use bone. They give an example of excisional debridement that includes skin and subcutaneous tissue and muscle is coded to the muscle body part. So what we're going to do then is we're going to start to build our code. So our first option is the first character we're going to select because it is surgical, medical surgical, which is character 0. Then the next option is anatomic location, and our option will be Q for lower bones, and then followed by B for the actual excision. So we have 0QB, and that's B as in boy. And in the options for the next characters, we have a body part, and we don't see an option when we start to build that code for calcaneus. So what we would do is go to our body part key, and that indicates that for calcaneus, you would refer to tarsal. So the next character would be L, as in Larry, for right tarsal, and then followed by 0 for the procedure is considered open, and then there's no device and no qualifier, so that would be ZZ. So your full code would be 0Q, B as in boy, L, 0, ZZ. And so the second part of that question we did not answer, but I will come back to it in the next episode and let you know about the beads. So, Pam?
Okay. Thank you, thank you. Okay, now this one, we're going to an inpatient rehab. And Laura is asking us, she says, hi, over the last couple of years, we have received different information regarding the coding clinic guideline about osteoporotic fractures. It seems everyone is doing their own thing and interpreting it differently. At one point, we were instructed the physician did not have to state it was an OP or pathologic fracture if it was just a minor fall, like bending over to pick something up off the floor and they fall over and break a hip. So we could make that judgment call as long as the patient was actually on an OP drug like Fosamax. The scenario, to me, wouldn't break a normal healthy bone like the coding clinic guidelines state below. Yet, the coding clinic seems to contradict itself. First, it states, not a trauma. Then it states, even if the patient had a minor fall or trauma. This just seems confusing, and we tend to ask each other the same question at our facilities when we come to these situations. The official guidelines for coding and reporting, section, I think that's 1C13D2, says, a code from category M80, not a traumatic fracture code, should be used for any patient with known osteoporosis who suffers a fracture, even if the patient had a minor fall or trauma, if that fall or trauma would not usually break a normal healthy bone. Can you please shed some light as to what this guideline is actually saying? Should we really query every time the scenario pops up in a patient with OP who's on OP drugs? Thank you.
Okay, Laura, thank you for that question. And so we went out and did a little digging and looked on the web to see what others were saying about this because, you know, it is a common question going back and forth. And the comments on the internet, you know, I mean, you can't judge those, but I just wanted to, we actually wanted to see kind of what was out there in the industry and what people were saying about it. And they really indicate that the coder is to determine it, but you know, we were not really comfortable with that. So we continue to dig. Now, determining whether a broken bone is pathologic or traumatic may not always be so clear-cut, just as you're saying. And in our opinion, it's a physician's decision. For the patient, now let me describe to you, I had a cousin. He passed away several years ago, but before that, he had cancer multiple times and, you know, had some things going on with him. He was very decrepit. And we were visiting one day, and he was, you know, he loved to do mechanic work. So he leaned over the side of the car to view the engine. And when he leaned over the car, you know, it was like an expedition, so it was kind of high up. And when he leaned over, he broke several ribs. That was clearly pathologic, but unless the physician states it, the coder is actually making that clinical decision when the coder chooses to make that decision, if you will. So now we dug a little bit more in coding clinic, too, because the wording, I agree with you, is completely confusing. Now, there is an old coding clinic from 1993, which says, we can't find where it was superseded, but we did find another support of it. So let me just share this with you. In 1993 coding clinic, it says, sometimes minor trauma can cause a fracture in an individual with severely diseased bone, and that is called a pathological fracture. Only the physician can determine whether or not the level of injury is in accordance with the degree of trauma suffered by the patient. So, likewise, there's another coding clinic in a more recent article from second quarter 2018 that also agrees with us that the physician has to say whether it is associated to the disease and is truly pathologic or not. So, unfortunately, you know, it would be a query situation if, you know, to get further details. But there are some other words, you know, other than pathologic that if the physician uses it, it does tell you that it is associated to the disease. So, Pam?
Thank you. Okay, now I'm not really sure where we are, so you're going to have to tell me about this one. It could be an inpatient because I see the word etiologic. This one's from Anonymous. And for those of you who are new, we welcome anonymous questions and non-anonymous questions. The difference, as far as we're concerned, is whether or not you're in the running for a mugging. So, and of course, if you're new, you probably think, oh my goodness. But a mugging is a good thing with Coffee with the Coder because we've commissioned a fabulous mug, and we give them away one per episode to someone who asks a non-anonymous question. And so that will happen at the end of this episode. But for now, let's look at Anonymous's question. We've got the principal diagnosis, yeah, this is inpatient rehab, of the IRF PI and UB are mostly the same. Is that right? For example, the patient has a right brain CVA. My ETI is I63.511. The other acute codes given are G81.94, hemiplegia, unspecified, affecting non-dominant side, and R29.810 facial weakness. So do I put the G8194 as an additional ETI, or do I put it in comorbidities in place of what was on the UB, which was I69.354, hemiplegia and hemiparesis following cerebral infarction affecting left non-dominant side, or do I not put it there at all because hemiplegia is captured in the IGC? I just don't want to leave out any detail. I'm quite certain that R29.810 facial weakness replaces I69.392 facial weakness following cerebral infarction. Am I correct?
Thank you for that question, Anonymous. And the way you ask an anonymous question, you, when you go to AQIQ and you post your question, you would just say, you know, I prefer this to be anonymous. You know, we're not going to say your first name. So anyway, this is quite a common question, believe it or not. First, I want to get a few things straight. The IRF-PI and the UB04 are two different documents, and both are required for payment, at least for Medicare claims. They're filled out on every patient, whether they're Medicare or not, but they really derive the payment for Medicare. They might also for some of the other payers, depending on the contract. Diagnoses are assigned to each of these documents using different rules. So to your question of if the principle is the same on both documents, the answer is not that clear cut. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. I'll explain a little more on that in just a minute. So the second thing to understand is that terminology is very specific to a coder, and that's because of our coding rules. I think most of us who are warriors for claims accuracy must be like me, digging and searching for the truth at every turn, but hanging on every specific word and analyzing those words. It's what we do. Let me explain it like this. I thought of a story that would help you understand, particularly if you're not a coder. It's like my son, who is actually my bonus son. Now, we never use the word step in this house. Anyway, he, like me, is a middle child. So I got his number really quick, but not the easy way. When he learned to drive, he was begging his dad and I to let him buy a truck. This wasn't just any truck. This was relatively a bigger truck with big wheels. I remember saying to him, if we let you buy this, it's going to be your daily driver. And here's the words that got me, guys. I mean, we would not expect you to take the truck in the woods and in the mud up to the headlights. Of course, he agreed and went on and was allowed to get the truck. Now, let's go forward a few months late in the evening. He was calling because he was stuck in the mud and needed assistance getting out. I was livid. Just then, those words came back to my mind. I said, we would not expect you to take it in the woods and mud up to the headlights. Like a true teenager and a middle child, the semantics of the words drove him to the decision to go off-road. You see, in his mind, it was okay if the mud stayed below the headlights, since I said, you can't go up to the headlights. So you see that wording is very important, and that's how coders think through deciphering each word. So let me throw out another thought. Most of the time, we in healthcare understand our roles, but we may not understand the bigger picture, or we may not understand how we impact others around us. It's like this in many IRFs that are attached to a hospital. The coders, and like I said, except in some of the larger freestanding facilities, may not be trained to code for the IRF-PI, and the PPS or CMG coordinators don't typically know coding. And there's this magic that poof, that's supposed to occur between the two to get the right codes on both the UB04 and the IRF-PI. So this is a whole process discussion for another day, but I wanted to paint you a little bit of the picture. On the IRF-PI, we report the etiologic diagnosis. That's that important word. And on the UB, we report the principle. These terms have different definitions. The principle is the chief reason for occasioning the admission determined after careful study, whereas the etiologic is the primary diagnosis that caused the impairment and the need for rehabilitation. It is not the impairment typically, but it could be, but it's what caused it. That said, the etiologic diagnosis can be resolved, whereas the principal diagnosis on the UB04 cannot. Now, let's just take a minute more and talk about reporting strokes on these two documents, because it's a little bit different than reporting other scenarios on these two documents. On the IRF-PI, the impairment is the hemiplegia. You've got your IGC to show which side is impacted. in this case, and the cause is acute stroke, which you are reporting with I-63 as the etiologic. And that's appropriate because the acute stroke is what caused the hemiplegia and the problem on the side of the body, which caused the patient to need rehab. On the UB04, the acute stroke is not the chief reason for occasioning the admission. The hemiplegia due to the stroke is. So that would be that I-69354 that you mentioned, which is hemiplegia due to stroke. The diagnosis reported for comorbidities are reported differently on each document for strokes as well. On the IRFPI, we're going to say they're acute codes. It's, for lack of a better term, they're not really acute codes. It's more the symptomatology codes. So usually those codes are going to start with an R, a G, or an F, rather than I-69, unless there was also an old stroke where you're going to report the I-69. And on the UB04, the I-69 codes are reported for all the residuals. So circling back to your question, the facial weakness due to CVA, I-69.392, is reported on the claim, and R-29.810, facial weakness, is reported on the IRFPI as a comorbid condition. The G code for hemiplegia, it's, you know, not required because, as you said, it's already included in the IGC, and your definitions in the IRFPI manual says, you know, those diagnosis codes that are not included in the IGC, report them. I do have many organizations who want to report that hemiplegia as a comorbidity. It's not going to tear you. It's not going to really have any weight as far as, you know, what's going on with the patient. So you can report it. It's just not required, or it's not really, you're just saying the same thing twice because you said it in your IGC. So it's really not necessary. But the I-69354 would be, which is hemiplegia due to CVA, would be the principal diagnosis on the UB04 claim form. I hope this gives you some clarity, and we can talk more about that on a later episode. I tend to get long-winded on these things. So, Pam, back to you.
Thank you, Paula. I love that level of detail. So thank you. I'm sure all our audience does as well. So it's time for the mugging. We had two non-anonymous questions. We had Ida and Laura. And so I've been shuffling their names under my desk here where I can't choose by a name and only choose by randomly. And let's see who's going to win today's mug. It's going to be, congratulations, Laura. I'm going to reach out to you and find out where to mail your mug. Thank you for sending in questions. Do send more, everyone. If you've never sent one before, it's really easy. Go to aq-iq.com. And in the blue and white bar, you see Ask Us. There's a drop down for Coffee with the Coder. And so all the previous episodes live there, as well as the opportunity to ask your question or reach out to us in some way in case Paula gives a scenario like she did at the beginning and you want to reach out to us and you don't have another way. That's a good way. So we look forward to hearing from you, seeing you all. I guess we don't actually hear from you. In 2 weeks for episode 80.